Welcome to season one of Inspiration Loves Company. I'm so glad you're here. I'm your host, Debbie Epstein Henry, a lawyer turned entrepreneur, public speaker, and author. The essence of this podcast is about doing better and being better at life, work, and everything in between. Thank you to the global law firm of Kirkland & Ellis, LLP, for sponsoring today's episode of Inspiration Loves Company. We're so happy you've joined our conversation. Our guest today is Stu Friedman. Stu is the organizational psychologist at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania. He is the founding director of the Wharton Leadership Program, and he also founded Wharton's Work-Life Integration Project. He has written two best-selling books, Total Leadership and Leading the Life You Want. The topic we'll explore today is leading at work and home, Total Leadership with Stu Friedman. We first met about 15 years ago over breakfast at Jaime's in the Philadelphia area. I think that's a favorite spot for you, right, Stu?
It's one of my go-to places, definitely.
Well, welcome. I'm so happy to have this opportunity to speak with you today. How are you?
I'm doing all right, Debbie. Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Since that breakfast, you've hosted me on your Wharton radio show and podcast. I brought you in for speaking through the Forum of Executive Women, and we've overlapped in lots of professional venues, the United Nations, Center for Talent Innovation, Working Mother, to name a few. We've also overlapped on the home front. That overlap, I think, is very fitting because it's precisely what I want to talk about with you today. But before we get into all that, let's start with your background as an organizational psychologist and some of the work that you've done at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania.
Well, thanks again for having me, Debbie. I got my PhD in organizational psychology at the University of Michigan in the early 80s, and I did a large-scale study of talent management systems in the Fortune 500. And this was at a time when the world of leadership growth and development was really emerging as an important aspect of business life in America and around the world. I also had an abiding interest in the relationship between work and the rest of life. And then when my first son was born in 1987, I started to talk a lot about what that event meant to me personally and what I thought it meant to my students and clients and anyone who I could get to listen to me about, you know, the question of what are we going to do to make the world a better place for our children? And what are you going to do as a business leader to make that happen? I would ask my students. And what I came to see pretty quickly was that I had the opportunity and the tools, the skills, you know, from my training to do work that would help to advance knowledge, practical knowledge about what it takes to integrate work and the rest of life. And so in 1991, I started the Wharton Work-Life Integration Project. And it was in that same year that I was asked to be the founding director of the Wharton Leadership Program based on the research and practice that I'd been doing in that domain. And so I spent the 90s doing both of those things. Because I was a man at the Wharton School in the early 90s talking about families and kids, I just got a lot of attention because I was strange at that time. That ultimately led to our getting a lot of support for the initiatives on research and practice on work-life integration. Well, the leadership program, you know, matured and became a success for the Wharton School by the late 90s. I was asked to join the Ford Motor Company as the head of leadership development globally for the company. One of the things we did at Ford was to create a model of leadership that was about both how to integrate the different parts of life in a way that worked for all the different parts, to create harmony in a way that improved performance in all the different parts and through which you grew as a leader. And we called that total leadership. And it was, I dare say, kind of revolutionary at the time at Ford. This is now 20 years ago, to engage people, not just in identifying their values and their vision and their key stakeholders at work, but also at home and in the community and for themselves personally. And then to take initiatives to do real action to make a positive impact demonstrably in all the different parts of their lives. And they just came alive and we had great business results and better health and lower stress and all kinds of wonderful outcomes. And so when I came back to Wharton, that became my primary focus, is to build up the leadership program from the perspective of the whole person. And so I started teaching the Total Leadership course and wrote books about it. And I'm now bringing that content to people and organizations around the world.
So that's really wonderful context. I want to hone in on what you highlighted as your distinctive contributions early on in the 90s, which was, number one, you were a male bringing your expertise to the work-life field at a time when really few, if any, men other than you really had a strong voice. And then secondly, that you brought the management/leadership perspective to work life, which I thought was so unusual contribution back then, and even in some ways still now. I want to expound on your total leadership concept, which I know ultimately was a best-selling book. Can you talk about how the concept of total leadership would play out in today's remote and hybrid workplace, and how total leadership can enable leaders to lead in a crisis?
The essential ideas we crystallized in this model about what does it take to lead from the perspective of your whole life. We distilled from our field research, our survey research, three principles: to be real, act with authenticity by clarifying what matters most to you, your values and your vision; to be whole, to recognize and respect the whole person, that is, that you're not just a business person, you've also got some kind of home life and some kind of community life, and then there's you personally, your mind, body, and spirit; and to be clear about what those people in the different parts of your life need from you, what they expect from you, what they see when they look to you, and what you need from them; and to become more skilled at building trust and having conversations with all those different people so that you can discover what they really think, not what you think they think. And then the third principle, to be innovative, to be continually experimenting with how things get done. These three principles we found were pretty much universal among people who were successful at leading from the point of their whole lives, constantly looking for new ways to get things done that were good for all the different parts of their lives, what I ultimately came to call four-way wins. What I'm finding now in these very tumultuous times of indeed crisis on so many levels is that this model is more resonant now than it was when we created it 20 years ago, because of the importance of having a clear, articulated sense of your purpose, your values, and your vision of a better tomorrow. To know what those are, what is it that you stand for based on your history, where you've come from, the episodes that have shaped your life, and what you think is important, what you believe in, and how that leads you to invest your precious attention and time and resources in trying to create a world that is indeed better for you and for the people around you. What does that look like? How does it play out? Not just over the long term, but today and tomorrow and next week and next month. To have that as a grounding, to be real, is essential in times of great strain and stress. It helps to keep you stable. It helps to focus your attention on the things that matter and gives you a sense of purpose that transcends, you know, the vicissitudes of the moment. To be able to connect with the people who matter most to you in the different parts of your life, you know, to be whole and to recognize how you show up as, say, a parent or a friend or as a community member, as a citizen, as a member of any kind of group. You know, your relationships in those parts of your life are affected by your work and vice versa, and how you draw support from and provide support to those people and the web of support that surrounds you, and really cultivating that by seeing how what you're doing influences other people. That now is, again, essential as part of the mindset and the skill set that people are needing to bolster in order to weather these incredible storms. No one does it alone. Everyone needs support, and knowing why you're doing what you're doing, helping you to be a better parent in articulating your values, using this time as a way to teach, as well as to draw support from the various sources you've got available to you, and then being creative about new ways of getting things done. You know, I thought I'd seen a lot, but there's nothing in my experience to compare to what we're experiencing right now on so many levels. And to be adaptive, to be learning, to be trying new things all the time in terms of where, when, and how you do things and why you're doing what you're doing. If you've got some skill in being able to do that in this rapidly changing world, you're gonna be more resilient, you're gonna perform better.
I absolutely agree with you, but it's interesting the way you approach total leadership. It's a very integrated approach. I think that's the whole premise of it as you describe it and as I've learned about it otherwise. What I wonder is your thoughts on how it is for people who are historically compartmentalizers. Many people are now working exclusively from home for the first time. And if they were the type of people who really felt more comfortable parsing out their life, how do they thrive in the current work environment that they're in?
With having to adjust. And so, yeah, let's get a little more practical. I've been speaking more at the sort of, you know, ideal level. How do you adjust? Now there is a large and growing cottage industry of, you know, work from home consultants. So there's many, many voices out there. And that's good. I think that one of the benefits of this, you know, tsunami that has just washed over all the walls of resistance to flexible work, remote work, and being compelled to trust your people when they are not next door to you, we're having to adjust and we're creating new models. And that's a good thing. If you're not accustomed to it, however, if you have lived your life, your professional life as I go to the office and that's where I do my office thing, my professional thing, and when I'm home, I'm 100% at home. For so many people, that is no longer true. So managing boundaries, one of the essential challenges of the whole total leadership approach, and we talk about that in many different ways, starts once again with, all right, what's important to me and what's important to you? What do we need to be able to do the things that are important to each of us and to us collectively? So having those conversations, and I don't mean 3 hours of an offsite, you know, in your backyard. I mean, you know, quick conversations where it's a regular part of how you live together to talk about, all right, what is it that you need? What is important to you? And here's what's important to me and why I think it's going to benefit you. What adjustments can we make? And just continually having that conversation so that you can have the time you need to be alone when you need to, or at least try to maximize that. And at the same time, realize that you can't have everything. It's impossible. And so one of the messages that I've been conveying to many of the businesses that I've been speaking to is you have to change your performance standards, which is not necessarily to produce poor quality, but rather to realize that you can't do everything that you used to be able to do, and nor can your people, including and especially your children, if you're a parent, still, you know, responsible for raising children. Performance standards have to be adjusted in light of our new environment. So there might be some things that you have to let go. And that becomes easier when you actually talk to people about what they need from you and become more skilled at hearing from other people what they truly expect of you and what you expect of them, which is not an easy thing to do and requires great skill, and you can never be too good at it. What most people find when they have these conversations about mutual expectations is that what others expect of them is different from and often less than what they had thought, which frees you up, of course, to make adjustments and to feel less pressure, less guilt, less fear of, you know, trying something different that might be, you know, good for you, if not good for them. So really listening, investing some time on a regular basis in how are we going to make this work? Can we try it for a couple of weeks or for a week and see if indeed life doesn't get better for you? And if not, we'll try something different. And that's kind of the essence of what we mean by being innovative and experimenting with ways of getting things done that are good for you and your world.
So much of what you are outlining is about effective communication and having the level of self-awareness to know both what your own needs are, but then also being able to be intuitive about what the needs are of others who are around you. One of the challenges is we're not all operating on the same playing field. There are some people who have many more constraints. They don't have the luxury of extra space right now, or they don't have a safe place to go outdoors, or they have disproportionate amount of responsibility in terms of childcare, elder care, sick care. What specific advice would you have for people who are really under a whole nother level of constraints in terms of these daily challenges?
I worry so much about this, Debbie, and I'm glad you're bringing it up. And unfortunately, there are no easy answers for people who don't have the kinds of resources and support that you and I have. I am now much more keenly aware than I've ever been about how much I have been privileged in my life, which, you know, I grew up lower middle class Brooklyn in an era when, you know, there was nothing but growth and opportunity for someone like me. it's a painful time. One of the things that I'm going to be dedicating, you know, as much of my energy and resources to is in providing, you know, people in government with, you know, my support who are going to create more of those resources and an infrastructure of support. Another thing that we teach people at all levels is how to ask for help in a way that isn't selfish. So, you know, here's what I need and here's how by my having that help from you, I'm going to be able to do better things for people in the world and that you might care about. So here's why it's useful for you to be helping me. What teachers are doing, what childcare providers are doing, what delivery service people are doing, what, you know, all kinds of people out there who have to be out in the world in ways that I don't, to cherish those people, to express appreciation and gratitude for them is something that I'm trying to do and that I would encourage, you know, everyone who's listening to just take another moment to do, because that's one of the potential silver linings here is that
yes,
there's a greater awareness, particularly for teachers.
Your points are really important. A related issue that I also know you're knowledgeable about is around mental health. When you're talking, as you are, about knowing and being available for help, this is another area. There is more openness on this subject, but in the workplaces that I'm working with now, there's a lot more of a discussion about this than I've ever remembered before. Given the uncertainty of the pandemic and the anticipated difficulties of potentially being in lockdown again over the winter and all of the very real concerns around resilience, what are warning signs that we should be looking out for? Because as you say, it takes a community and we all need to be attuned about when we really need to reach out and get help.
Glad that you're bringing this up, Debbie. It's an issue that's near and dear to me. There's mental health challenges and illness in my family, and all profits from all of my books go to NAMI, which is the National Alliance for Mental Illness. There is a greater awareness of our emotional fragility in times of great strain and pressure and uncertainty and fear. The greater sensitivity to those issues in the private sector, it's definitely an emergent trend. I think, you know, I had been seeing for some time now a greater interest and openness to talking about mental health challenges. I wrote about in the Harvard Business Review in 2009 about the experience of trying to get my work done while my son was hallucinating as an early teenager, and all the implications of mental health interfering with those of us who are caregivers. Caregivers for people who suffer debilitating mental health challenges. And now it's just really easy to talk about that. And it's common to talk about that, especially with the rise of, you know, drug addiction as and other behavioral disorders as being far too terribly common in our world and so many people touched by it. So the stigma of mental illness, which is a big part of what NAMI does and what we try to focus our charitable giving towards, you know, our efforts towards reducing the stigma of mental illness, the pandemic is helping with that because yes, everyone is struggling. Your question, which I haven't really addressed, is really getting at the core of the issue on a personal and interpersonal basis. Be attentive. Demonstrate your loving care for other people by just listening to their story. And I now start every single class on Zoom with, okay, go to the chat, tell us, how are you feeling today? And I spend the first, you know, part of class just talking about how people are feeling. That may not seem like a big deal, but it's just one small way that you can demonstrate to people that you are wanting to create a social environment, a work environment in which, you know, the emotional life is a part of the game and it's an important part of what we need to acknowledge for each other. So I think it just starts with that, paying attention and then realizing that we are indeed all struggling here. But I've also found that when, you know, to say to someone who is in pain, hey, everybody's suffering, that doesn't help very much. Because what they want is for you to just pay attention and to listen and to hear their story. And of course, to seek medical and professional help if what's happening is beyond what you're capable of.
This idea of being attentive, like you said, it often does help to show your own vulnerability. And as you've generously done, Stu, and I've seen you do it in many other contexts, I think it puts people at ease because the stigma is still very much there, even though there are amazing organizations like the one you mentioned that are working to eradicate it. The idea that
you can also create a forum for that informal connection is what so many people are missing right now. So that chat function in your classes, I'm sure goes a really long way. I know that when I am speaking to people at companies and firms, what many people say is the thing they miss the most is that informal connection at the coffee station or at the water cooler, grabbing a bite to eat for lunch. Just all those little informal moments of connection are lost right now.
Let's take a short break to hear about our sponsor for today's episode. Here at Inspiration Loves Company, we're all about inspiration, engagement, and impact. For over a decade, I've been so proud to partner again and again with my friends at Kirkland & Ellis, a global law firm that's all about those very things: inspiration, engagement, and impact. Kirkland serves a broad range of clients around the world, providing them with the highest quality legal advice, tailored service, and innovative solutions. But what I admire most about Kirkland is its commitment to making a real difference in people's lives. These attorneys have a genuine passion for providing pro bono legal help to those who need it most. Kirkland dedicates substantial energy, talent, and resources to pro bono initiatives across many significant areas: immigration, civil rights, LGBTQ+ advocacy, veterans benefits, and more. Kirkland's pro bono work is incredibly impactful, and the stories of the people helped through this work are truly inspiring. Check out kirkland.com/pro bono achievements to learn more about Kirkland's commitment to pro bono work and some of their latest projects.
You've mentioned at various points the idea of what parents are doing and mentioning children. Your most recent book, Parents Who Lead, is especially apropos right now. What are the most significant challenges that are facing children right now, and how would you advise parents to help address them again in the current climate?
There's just so much that is challenging now for children in America today and around the world, and parents are indeed struggling. The most pressing point that I've heard in the workshops and, you know, seminars and webinars and that I've been doing is this notion of performance pressure and easing it, and realizing that there's a grieving, you know, there's a reality to our losses that is not to be denied. And those continue to mount. All the things that haven't happened, that would have happened, that should have happened, that are gone now. It's very useful to acknowledge those and to listen to how people feel about their sense of loss, and to cry about it, and to not, you know, try to paper it over and it's going to be fine. Which is not to say, of course, that as parents, you can somehow evade responsibility for creating a picture of a better tomorrow. You have to do that. You have to find a way to speak to where there is a ray of hope for making things better, and doing what you can do within the limits of your, you know, resources and freedom and power to try to get to that better tomorrow. And that's really the essence of leadership, right? It's identifying what a better tomorrow looks like based on your core values, and then bringing people along there with you and showing them how it's possible without denying the present reality. Indeed, by embracing present reality and seeing it as clearly as you possibly can. And as parents, you know, of course, it changes if you've got a 3-year-old as opposed to a 13-year-old, as opposed to a 23-year-old, as opposed to a 33-year-old. You speak differently to them. But the general idea of, here's what is important to me, to us. I love you more than anything. I'll do everything in my power to make the world as good and safe as I possibly can for you, but I can't control everything. Here's what I'm trying to do. What do you need from me? You know, having those conversations, expressing on a regular basis your commitment and love for each other, and then hearing what they are feeling and what they need, and trying, and this is, I think, one of the great challenges of being a parent, and I'm sure you can relate to this, Debbie, is that, you know, they're never going to be who exactly you want them to be. They're going to be who they are. And meeting them where they are and then helping them to take the next steps on their path. That's what we do as leaders. That's what we do as parents. And I think now kids need that more than any other time because of all the uncertainty.
It's interesting the parallels you're drawing between parents and leaders. One of the talks I've been giving lately is talking about leaders who are leading with both conviction and humility. It's that mix that we're talking about. And as parents too, that you want to be supportive, you want to be loving, but you also want to be some level of security for them at a time where everything feels so uncertain. And being able to have that mix as a leader or a parent is critical, because otherwise you don't have, as you brought out initially, one of the total leadership concepts around authenticity. You're not real if you can't show both those sides right now, because that's just the reality that we're in.
Yeah. And I think it helps to have some sense of conviction and humility if you are able to describe what that better tomorrow looks like. So one simple exercise that we ask people to do in our programs and courses is to describe a day in your life, you know, sometime in the future. I like to use 15 years out because it's really far out there, but you can still picture it. And so you don't get bogged down in the details of an action plan for how you're going to get there. But just imagine, based on what you know to be important to you, based on where you've come from and the critical episodes that have shaped your values and the values that you hold dear today, 15 years from now, what would a day look like that you would want to see? And this is one of the things we have parents do in our workshop. We have them write their own individual leadership visions and then come together as a parenting partnership to write one collectively. And that has just an incredibly powerful impact if it's done with conviction and, you know, commitment and a sense of collaboration and compassion. It's something that I'm finding people are using now as one tool to help ground them in what matters today and how they focus their attention today and commit to their mutual support on a daily basis.
I love that exercise. Doing that sort of exercise right now would be particularly powerful, because I'm finding so many of us are getting more clarity in this moment. It's one of the silver linings that many of us are experiencing. And it's also accelerating different ideas that we had, because it's just been such a stark contrast to our regular life that for many of us, again, it's bringing that clarity. I want to end with some parting words from you. And I want to ask if you want to share a new idea that you want to underscore that we haven't touched on, or if I've missed something or gotten something wrong, or just something you want to highlight that we touched on but didn't devote enough time for.
Well, I appreciate your asking. The motivating idea for my work over the course of my career has been, how are we preparing a better world for the generations to come? And I think the more that all of us can be thinking about that question with respect to the important decisions that we make and the small decisions that we make each and every day, the more sane and peaceful and fruitful our world is going to be. And I think we can do that in any capacity, whether it's as a business leader, as a citizen, as a family member, to be trying to hold in your head and in your heart what's going to be the impact on the people who are going to be living on this beautiful earth beyond the time that I'm here. So I would ask that we all think about that just a little bit more.
And I can't think of a more fitting way to end, because we all need to be doing that now more than ever. The need to have the level of attention, the level of awareness, the level of community that you underscored today, and of course, the leadership and caring that we all need to do much better at today and across the world. I want to thank you, Stu, so much for this amazing conversation. I want to encourage our listeners to pick up a copy of your latest book, Parents Who Lead, which you co-authored with Alyssa Westring. I want to encourage listeners to also tune in to your radio show and podcast, Work and Life, on Sirius XM, Wharton Business Radio. And I also want to thank our incredible podcast team,
Creative Director and Copywriter Susie Rubin, Executive Assistant and Events Coordinator Renee Green, and our podcast producers, Cortland Brennan and Sam Barber. Also, thanks again to the global law firm of Kirkland & Ellis LLP for sponsoring today's episode of Inspiration Loves Company. If you are enjoying our new podcast, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, rate and review us, and tell your family, friends, and colleagues. We hope you join us next time.